Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for coming to tonight's Comic Book Club. And now here are your hosts, Pete LePage, Justin Tyler, and Alex Zalbin.
Hey, all right.
Oh, my God. What's up, you guys? My name's Alex.
I'm Justin.
I am Pete. Did you momentarily forget for a second what your name was?
No, you said, welcome to Alex.
No, I said, oh, my God, you guys, my name is Alex.
Oh, I thought you said welcome
but
to
Alex. But you know what? Welcome to Alex.
Yeah.
Don't clap. Don't encourage that. Yeah.
Part of what we like to do on the show is we like to welcome you guys into our lives, into our hearts.
Have, to think of the things I've exposed about my personal life.
What have you? You have literally exposed nothing.
That is not true. That People know a lot
true.
About my life.
Yeah, do they?
My home
Name
address.
One thing. Oh, your home address. Yeah, that's a good person.
That was a mistake. Yeah. That was a terrible mistake. Yeah. What about you? Pete, you're a closed book.
That's true.
What's that? Okay, cool.
Justin,
I've exposed that I have this cool robot.
We're going to make Justin stop talking for a second, and in order to do that, we are going to welcome our guest to the stage. We're very excited to have him back on the show. He's awesome. He's amazing. He's got lots of big news to talk about.
Yeah.
News. So, ladies and gentlemen, Vivek Tiwari.
Welcome to the show, sir. Welcome. It's great to have you. Great to have you back.
Awesome.
Thank you, guys.
Very excited to have you here. Very
good to
excited.
Be back.
Yeah, awesome. So I neglected to mention this in my intro, but you are the author of the hit best-selling graphic novel, The Fifth Beatle.
I am. Thank
Great.
You.
Well, yeah. thank you for coming
Very
on the show.
Proud
That's
of
all
it.
We needed to establish. well, obviously, the last time you were on the show, I think, had it not come out yet, or had it just come out?
It had not come out yet. I had just come back from San Diego last year, and the book came out in
it's
November.
So... Since then, I mean, I think it's fair to say that it's blown up.
It's been a whirlwind, a real roller coaster. It's been awesome.
Well, yeah, what has been that been like? So you wrote a graphic novel about kind of not exactly even a member of the Beatles, just the manager of the Beatles, which
is the fifth Beatle.
He's the fifth Beatle.
Thank
that's
you,
right,
Pete.
Pete read the title.
Yeah. Which is something that isn't, you know, it's not a superhero graphic novel. It's something that is. Kind of off the beaten path. So what has the experience been like, people responding to this?
It's been amazing and just so gratifying. You know, I've been working. It's about Brian Epstein, who was the manager of the Beatles, discovered them when they were playing basement clubs in Liverpool. They weren't even the most popular band in Liverpool, and he was the guy that guided them to the unprecedented international stardom that we now know them by.
So and for those of us who don't know the Beatles, could you tell us about
them? I'm not going to answer that question. I'm going to assume that we all know at least a little bit about enough to know why they're important. But Brian was you know, on that note, he was the guy that said in the early 1960s that they would elevate pop music into an art form, you know, which was kind of a ridiculous thing to say. But here we are 50 years later, you know, celebrating the Beatles' return to America. And I'll tell you, like, that probably wouldn't have impressed Brian. Brian, you know, always said that they'll be remembered hundreds of years from now, you know, in the way that the great classical composers would.
Now,
so he was that guy. Yeah. The story is about that guy. You know?
Well, I think you touched on this a little bit the last time you were here, but why was this a good subject for a graphic novel? I mean, what immediately made you think, oh, this is going to be a graphic novel?
Yeah, so I'm a big believer in the power of graphic novels to tell true stories, basically. You know, the book was recently nominated for...
Like Crisis on Infinite Earths.
Exactly.
True story.
Exactly. No, you know, the book has been nominated for best reality-based work at the Eisners, and I'm incredibly
Congrats.
Proud to be nominated anyway, but that category...
Yeah,
thank you.
Nice.
Thank you. But that category is something that I'm really proud of because I really believe that graphic novels are an incredibly powerful medium for telling reality-based stories. You know, I think that the graphic novel medium, it has the perceived legitimacy or authenticity of a book, of a biography, you know, so that there's a sense of that the authors of reality-based work have done their work, have done their research. It's not going to have just a Hollywood ending in the way that a biopic might be assumed to have. However, the graphic novel medium does allow you to get into the poetry. It does allow you to dramatize, if you will, certain sequences. So in a lot of ways, I think it's a wonderful medium for true stories. You know, and for me, telling the Beatles of it all, you know, how he got them a record deal when no one wanted to sign them, how he convinced Ed Sullivan to book them. All those stories were important and interesting, and it's really what initially attracted me to the Brian Epstein story. But it was the human side of his story that really struck a deep chord for me. And I don't want to babble too much, but he was gay and Jewish and from Liverpool. And in the night,
so easy life.
Yeah, exactly. It was like
easy life in the 60s.
It could not have been any harder. It was a felony to be gay.
Right.
You know, it was literally against the law. So, you know, for this gay Jewish man to be running around Liverpool saying, I found a local band. They're going to be bigger than Elvis. They're going to elevate pop music into an art form. It was crazy, you know, and that's really the story that I want to tell. And to me, that's a story that needs to, you know, for lack of a less cheesy way of putting it, needs to be told poetically. It's the poetry of the story. And I feel that nothing can better do that than sequential art. And certainly, and I'm not the artist, I'm the writer, but the artwork that Andrew Robinson did for this book is breathtaking.
Yeah, it's great. Yeah.
And so what better way to tell the story than with artwork like Andrew's? So,
would you consider telling the story of another band's manager, like a Third Eye Blind or an insane
There are
posse?
Some great managers. I don't know about Third Eye Blind's
Nickelback,
Space Hog.
You know, Peter Grant, who managed Led Zeppelin, that's a great story. Yeah. You know, the management of The Who is a great story. Andrew Lou Goldham, who managed the Rolling Stones, has written a book, several books. His life story is great. There's a number of really cool artist manager stories. Yeah. You know, Colonel Parker is mentioned in the Fifth Beatle, not too flatteringly, I will say.
He was sort of a dick.
So he was the anti-Brian, I would say.
Yeah.
You know, Brian said the Beatles would elevate pop music into an art form. Colonel Parker referred to Elvis as an attraction.
Yeah,
so that's the key difference between the two. However, that's a great story. It's a great story. You know, I mean, to give Colonel Parker his credit, you know, he really made Elvis. I think he made him and broke him in a lot of ways, but he made him to begin with. You know, Elvis was a poor Tennessee guy, and you know, didn't really understand the business. And Parker turned him into an international superstar. So there's a lot of credit to be gained for that. But he also viewed him as an attraction and really kind of sucked the soul out of him. Which makes for a fantastic story, but since I'm not a fan, it's not one that I want to tell. Well, so you can read the 8-page sequence in The Fifth Beatle and know how I feel about Colonel Parker.
There you go.
You know.
Now you mentioned the Eisners, which you are up for.
Yeah.
An Eisner. I don't know if you know, we are actually an Eisner-winning news That's team. True. I don't know if you guys remember that.
I feel like
I
people
did not
would
know
question.
That. Excuse my ignorance.
I feel like people would question the term news team before the Eisners.
Let's just say we were in San Diego Comic Con the same time that Newsarama was.
And we were working for them.
Yeah, we were working for them. Did they actually win?
They did win, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Remember? So basically, we won.
Yeah. Well, we are
Eisner
winners.
That's a big leap.
So we look forward to you hopefully joining the club.
It's a collaborative medium. Come on.
We hope you get to join the club.
I hope so, too. Please vote for us.
Yeah. Well, how do people do that? How do they vote?
Yeah, so thank you for asking. So anyone, any comics professional can vote. It's something that I've been doing all the cons, which I love doing, and so many people are coming up to me and who are industry professionals and saying, congratulations on your Eisner nominations, good luck. And I say, thanks, you know, please vote for me. And they're like, I would if I could. And I'm like, you can. So I do really want to get this out there. You know, EisnerVote.com. You register to vote, and literally anyone in the comics industry who has a legitimate job, an artist who's worked for a real company, a retailer, a librarian, a historian, an educator, anyone who has a job
host.
In the comics industry podcast is host. Eligible to vote. So please do vote. And you know, not to go off on too much of a tangent, but I obviously hope people will vote for me, but I also I would encourage you to vote.
We
all love this industry, and the Eisners are a major award,
and
I think, you know, it's important to support the creators. So please, if you love comics, you know, whether or not you vote for Fifth Beatle, please if you're in the business, go to EisnerVote.com and vote. Vote for someone. But vote for me.
Yeah, I mean, just to tip it in your favor a little bit, so it's you guys, the Fifth Beatle. One of the other nominees is Hitler is Awesome.
Yeah.
I don't remember the other ones, but that's...
Well, there's the Sixth Beatle, another great book.
Yeah, the Seventh Beatle. There's a book called The Fifth Beatle Sucks, which seems very mean.
That's very aggressive. Well, yeah,
thank you. I'm not taking anything for granted. But right. And Andrew Robinson is also... The second Eisner award that we are nominated for is Andrew for his painting work. We were talking earlier... His work is gorgeous.
Well
it
deserved.
Is really
I agree. He really does deserve it.
Now, you mentioned that graphic novels are the best canvas for telling a story, but you're going to be telling it on a different canvas as well. It's been picked up for a movie.
We are also adapting it into a film. That's correct. You know, when I've been researching the story literally for 21 years, and it was about... it's a long time labor of love for me.
Ooh.
And it was about a decade ago that I decided I wanted to take the... And I started researching it out of personal interest. You know, I was at the time I was in business school. I was dreaming about working in entertainment. I was a Beatles fan. I thought I should study the life of the Beatles manager. Was shocked to find out how little information there is available about him. The Fifth Beatle is literally the only book in print, graphic novel or otherwise, about Brian's life. And so when I, you know, and 21 years ago, there's no YouTube, there's no Wikipedia, there's no Google. So I was, you know, I found myself in a position where if I wanted to learn more about this guy, I had no choice but to do intense research. Mm. And so I did, and I uncovered this story that's obviously been very inspiring to me. But it was about a decade ago that I decided that it was time to tell it, you know, that I wanted to share it with the world. And, you know, the story really focuses on the last 7 years of his life, which is the period he spent with the Beatles. I mean, we do get glimpses of his past through exposition, dream sequences, hallucinations, et cetera. but so the 7 years, it's like 61 to 67. So 1961, where it starts in Liverpool, it's dark, it's gray, it's rainy, it's very black and white, it's industrial. You know, at the end of the book, 1967 London, it's the birth of the Summer of Love, the psychedelic era. It's, you know, literally there's an event that year called a Technicolor Dream. You know, so I saw the story as mirroring the arc of the movement from black and white to color.
Yeah.
You know, to me, that also screamed graphic novel.
Sure.
But I feel the two mediums that most powerfully use color in their narrative are graphic novels and film. And so I also, from day one, wanted to do it as a film. And film also has the amazing component of sound. And I'm very proud to say that the Beatles have...
So you're doing a talkie.
We're doing a talkie with music.
Good choice.
Which is one of the exciting things.
Yeah, you got some good tracks in there.
We do have some good music. And we got the approval of the band. You know,
I think we talked about that last time you were here, how amazing and rare it is that they give that out.
We are the first and only biopic ever
to
have gotten access to Beatles music. So that's really a huge score for us.
Wow.
Thank you. And they're fans of the book. Paul McCartney in particular is a huge comic geek. I don't know if you knew that.
Wow.
What?
He's a huge comic
geek. No, we actually bumped him for you tonight.
Oh, thanks, man.
That's crazy.
Yeah, well, he's...
Yeah, he called us up and he's like, but I'm a big fan of The Punisher.
He has
a song. I wanted to talk about Deadpool.
Yeah, but he's not nominated for an Eisner.
I know we're going to do some X-Men talking later, but he has a song called Magneto versus Titanium Man. Which is about Magneto versus Titanium Man.
Seriously?
Absolutely.
Really?
What B-side is that? What weird album is that? I mean, he has some crazy... Paul McCartney's solo work is crazy.
It is a lesser-known Paul song, but it is a Paul song.
You ever heard the song Temporary Secretary by Paul McCartney?
I don't know that
It's insane. It's like a weird They Might Be Giants.
Is it about Murphy Brown when they had to keep...
Yes! Yeah. He's a huge Murph head. We don't want to get into that, though.
Cool.
Murphy Brown fan.
So where are you with the film of it?
We are casting Brian Epstein literally as we speak. We're out to a handful of wonderful actors. I can't say who we're talking to, but we are talking to some wonderful A-listers, if you will.
Yeah.
Well, I hope to announce
soon. I mean, I think within the next few months we should be able to announce our Brian, and we'll be shooting early next year.
When you're casting the story and knowing the story, obviously, quite a bit... what's harder, casting Brian Epstein or casting the Beatles?
Well, you know, we really are taking it one step at a time, and we're just focusing on Brian right now. I mean, I think the Beatles will certainly be a challenge, but we're certainly not really iconic or anything. Yeah,
so.
You know, our director is Peyton Reed, who's amazing. He directed Yes Man, The Breakup, and the original Bring It On, and also a period piece in the 60s called Down With Love. That's also amazing.
Yeah.
And so ultimately, you know, a lot of these casting decisions will be his. You know, I want him to... He's a huge comic fan also, a huge Beatles fan, and he's become a very good friend of mine. So we definitely share vision, and so I'm very comfortable with him at the Realm. But I want him to have artistic vision. And so in large part, that decision will be his. Although if I had to say right now, my feeling is that we should probably go out to Liverpool and do an open casting call and just find some super talented unknowns who can nail the accent and nail the
that's awesome.
That's what I think we should do. But you know, I want to let our director.
Your director might have some great actor ideas, we should have cast some actors in these parts.
And he may say that. Totally. And that would be a valid point. So I don't want to, I want him to do what he thinks is best for the film. But that's what I think. You know, I think you're right. I mean, they're icons, you know. I think it's very difficult to see an actor that is known come out there and try to convince you that he's John Lennon. But a young guy who's an unknown, who's got the Liverpool style and swagger because he grew up there and it's in his blood, yeah. I think that might be the way to go.
If you're looking for any tips, there's a great movie called That Thing You Do.
Oh, sure.
Which you should check out. Yeah, just cast them.
I love that movie.
It's a great movie.
All of
classic.
Those guys.
And it's kind of about Brian.
Yeah.
The character is really Brian Epstein influenced.
Tom Hanks.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah, you could just recut scenes from That Thing You Do.
It's a great movie.
It'd be fun.
I love that movie.
Talk about other comics work a little bit. We hear.
Yeah, I believe you're here to announce something.
Yes. I was going
to
do that.
Well, but you need to give it some zest.
Yeah.
You need to give it
I was revving up to it.
No, you got to jump in.
Ladies and gentlemen, Vivek Tiwari announces tonight. Wow, that was pretty amazing.
Wow, that was awesome.
That was awesome.
Nice.
What are you announcing?
I'm really excited.
You lost your footing.
I am incredibly excited to announce. No, I am. I'm writing a short story for Harbinger for Valiant Comics. Super excited about it. Harbinger is celebrating its 25th issue. It's going to be an anniversary issue coming out a few weeks before San Diego Comic-Con in July. And it's going to be a 48-page issue featuring a number of guest creators, and I am one of them. I'm incredibly honored to do this. Huge fan of the series. And it'll be my first superhero work, and I've grown up reading superheroes, so I'm really excited about it.
And it's about the manager of the Harbinger crew?
It is not about the manager. In fact, for those of you who are fans and know the story, I will say that it focuses on the relationship between Peter Stanchek, the lead character, and Joe Irons, who is his best friend. Who's a wonderful character that Josh Dysart created and is very important in the first several books. We don't see a lot of him. And he's a character that I thought was really great and really ripe to learn a little bit more about his background and his relationship with Peter.
Cool.
So that's what it's about.
Cool.
And I can also confirm some of the other creators who will be joining me on this fantastic
Keep in mind,
issue.
This is breaking news.
Breaking news.
So Josh Dysart and Carrie Evans, who are the regulars, will obviously be doing some writing. And Louis LaRosa is going to be painting my pages, which I'm super excited about. He's amazing. And also Janet Lee, Justin Jordan, and Barry Kitson will be involved.
Oh, nice.
And there are going to be five covers by Miko Suyin, Jenny Frisson, Lucy Kinsley, Sean Chen, and Barry Kitson.
That's awesome. That's really exciting.
So I'm super stoked about it. Thank you for allowing me to announce it here.
Oh, man.
You heard it here first.
Yeah.
You heard it first.
That's why we're Eisner winners, because we break news.
In the most awkward manner possible.
Exactly. We spend more time working on our announcing voices, and then we break news.
Yeah, well, the way that I like to break news is I kind of work up behind someone, get in their ear, be like, damn.
Yeah, it's good. You're a real creep. You're known as a creep around the comic.
So you touched on this a little bit. What is it like for you going from biographic comic to working in a superhero universe? What are the challenges?
Oh, man, it's so much fun. You know, as I said, I grew up reading superhero comics. I grew up reading comics. I mean, I know we're going to chat some X-Men later, but, you know, Chris Claremont is a huge part of my childhood.
Yeah.
You know, so... you know, it's a kind of a dream come true, you know, and I love, obviously the Fifth Beatle is a huge labor of love for me. It's been a joy to work on it, and it's a joy to still work on it. So I don't want to take anything away from that, but it has been 21 years of research, you know, and it's actually really refreshing to be handed the universe, you know,
you don't have to do all that,
a universe that I know and love, as opposed to having to research the universe for 2 decades, you know, it's great on every front.
Being a comic book fan, though, you have to know that probably the only people crazier about continuity than Beatles fans are comic book fans.
Yeah, hell yeah. So it's, for me, it's perfect.
There you go.
You know, because I'm a huge Beatles fan to begin with, so getting all that stuff right. You know, we were talking about the poetry versus the facts. The facts are important to me. You know, I consider myself a minor historian myself, and
so
I know there's a ton of Beatles historians out there.
You didn't retcon Pete Best out of the Beatles continuity.
Oh, man. So I did not write him out of the continuity, although for those of you who've read the book, you'll know that the Pete Best story is not in the book.
Yeah.
But I will say one of the things that's exciting about the film is we call it an adaptation because that's easy for people to wrap their heads around.
Right.
But it really is an expansion, which comic
that's
book
good.
People will appreciate.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's not the book set to film. In fact, there's going to be a lot of stuff that's not in the book, and a lot of stuff that's in the book is not in the film.
Yeah.
You know, so that if you want to get a full picture of the Brian Epstein story, you should experience both. And the Pete Best story is something that will heavily factor into the film, but doesn't appear cool.
So it's like the fifth Beatle and ultimate fifth Beatle.
And it's
right. Yeah, exactly.
Days of future. Days of future Beatles.
And for those of you out there who don't know, P. Best was with the Giovanni Ribisi character from That Thing You Do was.
Great.
Right? Anybody nice. Out there real That Thing You Do fans? Yeah, people are actually nice. Nodding.
There we go.
Yeah, we're getting into it. Yeah. That's the deepest reference I've ever made in my life. Just so well, you
see,
guys know.
We are learning stuff about you this
Yeah,
show.
See? I'm That's a great. Very big fan of cool.
So, that. But you know, I do want to say one other thing. You know, I feel like the best superhero work is the stuff where the fact that they're superheroes really is secondary to the story. You know, it's about the human stories. You know, I'm excited to talk about X-Men. I keep mentioning it. But, like, you know, what I loved about the Claremont stories is those were real characters. You know, it wasn't about their powers. It was about what they were going through as kids. It was about their loves and their desires and their frustrations. Like, that's what I loved about those books was the human side of things. Yeah. So really, like, in some ways, to have spent so much of my time dealing with a true story and one that is very dramatic and very tragic. You know, he dies at the age of 32, never having had a proper boyfriend. You know, the Brian Epstein story is full of joy and inspiration, but it is also tragic. Mm. In a lot of ways, those are the elements in my mind that make for great superhero stories. So in some ways, it hasn't felt as radical as it might right. seem on the surface.
Gotcha. You know? Well, cool. Well, when is that coming out?
That is coming out in July. I forget whether it's the week before or 2 weeks before San Diego Comic-Con. So in early, mid-July.
Great. Nice. And I know we just talked about this, but if you're an Eisner voter, if you're a comic book professional, when do you have to vote until?
Oh, thank you for asking. June 13th.
All right.
So
please
go to EisnerVote.com before June 13th and register and vote. And again, please just vote. Even if you don't vote for me for the fifth Beatle, please vote.
Awesome. Very cool. All right, guys, we are going to move on with our next section, which we like to call the stack.
Yeah.
And in the stack, we're going to go to bat for some books that we particularly like this week.
Yeah.
We're going to start off with Pete's pick. Pete's pick, which is Saga from Image Comics.
Nice. Very popular.
Saga is back. Oh, yeah. It's been so long.
Oh, nice.
But, I got real excited when I saw it.
Saga number 19.
On the Diamond List.
Yeah.
It's been so long. It was very exciting. This was an amazing issue, as always. They does really well with the first page and the last page, continuing this theme.
The first page was a birth.
Yep.
Yes.
Straight up birth happening.
Straight up birth.
Like literally a computer TV head coming out of a body.
Yeah, it's. I think we were talking about this last week. There's that issue of Miracle Man where they give birth. I don't know if that was the first mainstream-esque comic where they showed a birth. There certainly haven't been a lot since.
Yeah, it's not a popular.
No?
I mean, we all went through it once, so we get it.
Well, there's the Spider-Man Clone Saga issue where Spider-Man gives birth to his own clone.
Yeah, that was pretty intense.
That was gross. But this is beautiful.
Yeah. Oh, nice turn there.
This comic's always amazing. I mean, I agree with you. It's wonderful to have it back. This issue plays, for the most part, as a little bit of a, I don't know, would you say a down issue?
Courtroom drama?
Courtroom drama? No, that's not what I was thinking.
No, that's not it.
You know, you were mentioning X-Men, that it was the human drama. That was amazingly making me thinking of the baseball game issues in X-Men.
Yeah.
They never do that.
They're always my favorite.
I hate when you think of those.
I always think of those.
I love those.
So there were always these issues where Clarice Claremont, where after a big fight or something, they'd get back to basics. The characters would play these baseball games. Yep. But it would always play off the character relationships and push things forward at the same time. That's what this issue feels like, where we check in with the characters, we find out what's going on, we get to see a few live births, things like that.
Yeah.
And then the last page, as usual, completely guts you.
Yeah.
Completely, almost out of nowhere, and it's the worst thing.
Yeah.
And I can't believe I read it right before the show, because I was like, okay, I'm going to read Saga right before. Oh, no!
And it was he did such an amazing job of writing up to it. Like, it was this beautiful little moment where the baby's like, I want to squish.
But,
Well,
hold on. Are we going to say what it is? Because that's a spoiler.
Okay. Well, should I not say it then?
Have you been reading Saga?
I have not read this issue, so.
Okay. You know, so we'll keep it.
But, you know, it's okay.
We can keep it secret. You can keep it safe.
It's about the, you know, the lead up and the writing.
Yeah,
so
feel free. If you want to make some guesses as to what it is.
No.
Go ahead.
No.
Yeah. There's an unbirth.
There's
they suck the baby back in.
Yeah.
Didn't see that coming.
One of the driving things in this book for me has always been the relationship. So if this is going to go in this direction, I'm going to be very angry.
Okay, well, that's a big clue.
I am dying at this point to know, and I don't know if anybody out in the audience knows, but I'm dying to know how Brian K. Vaughan writes each issue of Saga, because every single issue starts with a gigantic splash page that is just jaw-dropping and shocking, ends with a page that is a splash page and jaw-dropping and shocking. So I just want to know if he starts with those and then fills in a bunch of crap in the middle that's also awesome.
He's pretty awesome. Yeah.
I would think he would write his story and then he would just add those points. It's sort of like writing a drama, like a TV drama, where you have to write toward each commercial break, but then you have to add a big hit.
Sure. Yeah. But it's amazing. I don't know how he does it. He's done it for 19 issues at this point.
Well, and I think also, like, maybe this is a weird thing to say, but I feel like he really thinks about his story. Like, he really goes through and combs over. I don't know if it's more time-consuming, if he puts more time in, but it feels like he's just, every moment seems very, like, prepared.
Yeah. I agree.
Oh, did you lose focus?
Just for a second.
Yeah, okay, cool. No one noticed.
Yeah. I mean, I think that a lot of that has to do with Fiona Staples as well. We talked about this since the very beginning of the first issue. It's not just the art, though. It's her lettering as well.
Yep.
That is part of the art that's just builds the story, plays with the story, plays with the art. It's great. Everything about it is great. If you're not reading it, I don't know why, because this is...
Yeah, what are you doing with your
probably
life?
This is the comic of our lives.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Just think about our futures, and we'll look back.
Yeah, speaking of the comic of our lives, let's see if this next one is going to be the next comic book of our lives. Oh, the great. Last broadcast.
Last broadcast, number one.
This... is Justin's pick.
Yeah, I picked this because I really liked it, from Arkea. This comic is about a...
What's this about?
It's, you read it, right?
Yeah, I did read it.
Okay, cool. So it's about...
I had to read it twice, I'm still like, what's this about?
Okay, good. I can't wait for your review. So it's about two stories. It's about these three characters that are exploring the San Francisco.
Wait, it's two stories?
It's two stories.
It seems
it's
more than three characters.
Threads. Wait a second.
Oh, two different threads. Okay.
Well, there's different stories and our threads that will eventually be woven together.
Was there time jumping as well?
Nope. No.
All right. Pete, it's like you saw Days of Future Past, right?
I did.
It's the exact same thing.
Yeah, it was modeled on that.
Oh, right. Sure.
It's about a magician, like a bad magician who's obsessed with this other magician that died, who's like a legend.
Here, just quick question for you. Why didn't they call this comic Bad Magician?
I don't know. People like their magicians to be good.
All right.
In general. David Copperfield.
He's bad.
Other magicians. He's a good magician.
He's evil.
You know, he made me disappear once.
Did he really?
Oh, how's that for getting behind the curtain?
Yeah, wait, what happened?
I haven't told this story 100 times.
No, never.
When I was five, I grew up in Syracuse.
This isn't true.
This is straight up true.
What?
When I was five, David Copperfield toured back then more, and he picked me out of the audience. I went on stage. He put me in. I did all
Where
this.
Where was this?
Syracuse. I literally just said that. This is the only part of the story you know.
Was it at a mall? Was it at a
theater?
No, it
was at Syracuse War Memorial, the theater.
Okay, thank you.
He was a big-name magician.
Were you on the street corner? Yeah, and he was like, I'm going to take this kid. What the fuck
happened?
Yeah,
it wasn't David Copperfield. There was a crazy guy at the mall. He was like, I'm going to make you disappear.
Yeah, and he almost murdered me. No, he brought me on stage. He put me in a tuxedo. And then he put me in a box. Swear.
Sorry.
He dressed you himself. He
was like, strange man. Tuck off your clothes.
He wasn't strange.
That made you disappear.
He's strange in that he knows magic. And he put me in the box. I vanished. On the side of the box was a handle, and he turned it, and a flat version, like a photograph of me, like my life size, came out. He went and put it back in the chair next to my parents in the audience, and the audience is like laughing. It was like a comedy bit. And then he made me reappear, and then I sat back down. And it was going to be on TV, and then they cut it for a special bike trick that he did.
Aww.
Otherwise, I'd be famous now.
Oh, man.
I mean, more famous.
let me ask you this. Who did your parents like better as a son, you or that flat piece of paper?
I haven't talked to them since that day, because they raised that photograph as their own. I've been an orphan. trying to get photographic parents.
How come that's the first time this story has ever been?
I've told every one of my friends that story like 19 times. I can't believe I haven't said it on this show.
I'm telling you don't tell us personal things on the show.
I guess not. Anyway, this comic is like that, but in comic book form. See you guys later.
This comic is nothing like that.
This comic is actually really good. It's these people who find this magician's little secret shop in underneath San Francisco, and it's the two stories are going to come together. It seems very cool.
The art's pretty awesome.
Awesome.
I was going to mention that actually. I really like the art a lot. There's a nice use of shading, a nice gentle use of color throughout, and anything with a magician, I'm going to like.
Yeah, well, good.
Really?
Well, get to know
it's
me.
True. Watch The Prestige a ton of times. What?
The Prestige?
Yeah, The Prestige.
Yeah, there are other things with magicians. There are real magicians.
I don't know. Christian Bale's the only real magician for me. Let's talk about that pick. Invincible 111.
Yeah.
From Image Comics. I am done with this comic, you guys.
What?
You're retiring.
What?
Yeah.
Wait,
I'm retiring. This issue for me, I've read Invincible for approximately 111 issues at this point.
Yeah.
This issue
so
for me.
So you missed 8 issues somewhere in there.
111. There are 100. This is an issue.
No, Pete wrote 8 issues on his own.
Yeah, I did.
You missed them. Like,
yeah.
I mean, you didn't miss them, but you missed them.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I didn't read Invincible as best friends with Pete. issue arc.
I worked really hard on that.
Yeah, I don't know if you guys remember, there's a little bit of a spoiler for The Walking Dead, but there was that issue of The Walking Dead where Carl got shot in the eyeball.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I said, I'm done with this comic book.
Not true.
Well, it wasn't true. It's the same thing with this. But this for me is, I still have not gotten back into The Walking Dead the same way since that happened. Yeah.
Come on.
Seriously, it completely took me out. It completely removed me from the book.
You shoot one kid in the eye.
I realize it's a superhero book. I realize main characters die all the time, come back to life all the time, all of that stuff. But last issue, Invincible got raped, which was certainly a breaking point for me. They said they were going to deal with it in this issue. This issue was like, whew, sure got raped. Up to superheroing.
Didn't mention it once.
Yeah, and that was uncomfortable to me. And then they savaged several characters in this book beyond recognition in the goriest manner possible, which I understand is Robert Kirkman's MO, but again, completely takes me out of the book, takes away from my enjoyment and excitement in reading the book, and I'm as done with it as I was with Walking Dead, which is I will still read it for the show.
Yeah, we'll see you next issue.
Yeah, but I'm done with the book.
Pete, your heart has been hardened. Tell us what you thought of this.
I mean, I did think the rape was a little much in the last issue, but I did like this idea that they were getting into in the last issue of, like, when you are a superhero and also trying to balance a relationship, there's going to be issues of, like, I think you should stay
issues,
home.
Pete?
Well, like, she,
what issues specifically?
Well, she was like, don't go on this mission. I need you at home. I'm going to have a baby. And he was like, no, you don't understand. I'm doing this for the baby. So he went out and put himself on the line to try to stop a bad guy before he came back and hurt the family, right? Mm-hmm. But she was like, I have a bad feeling about this. Don't go. So he goes. Of course, it goes horribly wrong. And then he shows up like a couple months later. And she's like, yeah, we're finished. And I thought that was such a cool, interesting move to have like these two people like stand behind their beliefs and really, you know.
Yeah, consequences.
But then you think like, okay, now we're really going to get into it. But then the villain makes such a crazy move where, you know, her leg gets ripped off and you're like, oh,
it's
my
very
God.
Violent. Yeah,
it was crazy.
Yeah, there's nothing reading a comic book, the issue after the main character got raped, where the main female character who is pregnant gets her leg ripped off and nearly dies. I don't know. There's something just not that fun about it.
It's very savage. It's I agree with you. Like, this issue was difficult to read. And I do like the way that he's setting up a new, like it says on the cover, what a new status quo this is. And it's setting up two main characters to be, like, in opposition to each other in, like, an interesting way. I would like this much better if it wasn't so grisly. It does not need to be this way.
Yeah, that's the thing. I think back to the
I feel like that's a crutch of Kirkman's.
I agree. I think... That got in. I think back to those first 13 issues of Invincible, which were so good. It got grisly. It got a little bit violent, but it built to that, and it built logically to that, and then it pulled back from that. And now every other issue, Invincible, is somebody's getting their head squeezed.
Yeah. There's a lot of head squeezing in this.
There is.
The heads burst, and it's literally like someone poured a bucket of paint on the ground every time. Like, people in this universe have very viscous blood.
And look, I'm not saying.
And you don't hear a lot of people report on that, like this news team.
Robert Kirkman's a good writer. Is this Ryan Ottley?
Amazing writer.
He's a fantastic artist. He does a great job of drawing people's legs getting ripped off. They're talented, they're very nice guys. I just don't need to read it.
Yeah, they should turn off the violent video games.
Yeah, I think it's the video games and the movies that they've been watching.
Oh, man. You guys are really
And you know
old.
What I think? I think it's comic books.
Oh, boy.
I'm going to blame it on violent comic books.
What do you think? Do you think this is, Vivek, do you think this is too grisly? I mean, you're flipping through it now.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I haven't read it, so I feel maybe unqualified to say, but... just looking at it, it does feel a little unnecessary.
Terrifying.
Yeah.
Are you scared?
How many characters?
I mean, like that. I wanted to see that page because you talked about it. The pregnant lady getting her leg ripped off. I mean, I think it's important. I think it's possible.
How many people are de-limbed?
Also, if you're ever wondering, maybe, a pregnant lady getting her leg ripped off, the sound effect is splagack.
Mm-hmm. That's scientifically proven. And how many people get their eviscerated in the fifth Beatle, just as a side
emotionally, there's a lot of emotional
eviscerated. There it is. There it is. Yeah. That's a
Which
good,
can be worse.
Yeah.
All right, cool. Guys, that's it for the stack.
It could be worse.
And now, you guys, it's my favorite section because we're going to go out to you guys. It's your audience questions.
Yeah.
And for the audience questions, as I mentioned, I'm going to go out to you guys. You're going to get some free comics for asking questions about literally anything. Comic book stuff, geek stuff, anything for our special guest over here. Anything that comes to your mind, you get free comics. And not only that, we're going to have a special prize for one lucky winner at the end. So ask the questions, make it good. Raise your hand. Who would like to ask a question? Eddie, sir, I saw your hand up first. Come on over here. Let's give him a round of applause.
Come on down. I know. He's dressed up for this show.
Navin.
Oh, hi, Navin. What's your question?
My question is, which comic book in your collection are you not willing to give up or sell?
Ah.
Oh, boy.
Nice. Very topical.
That is a very good question. I would say for me, based on last week's show, MILF Magnet. And yeah, I don't remember.
You literally gave those away.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Nice. Great. MILF
no,
Magnet.
No, I would say, honestly, is it one comic or could it be a run?
Collection. It could be a
run.
Yeah,
do both. Yeah.
Whatever. Alpha Flight 1 through 12, the original John Byrne issues.
Wow.
They are some of the best comics ever written. It's such a full arc that it completes the story of all of these characters. Obviously, it was ongoing after that, but I will never, ever give those up.
Wow.
Ever.
Wow. Surprising choice.
There you go.
Pete?
The thing that I'm most guarded about is most proud of in my collection is I have all of Eastman and Laird's Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. So I'm never going to give those up ever.
Look, the audience gasped at that.
That was mine.
Yeah.
That was mine.
Really?
Was
totally.
It really?
Yeah.
Oh, look at you too.
Yeah.
Wow.
It was one of the first things that really, I was like, this is amazing. I got to have everything.
Yeah. Yeah. Did you see, just a little bit of a side note, but there's the new Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie coming out. Did you see they have an ad, which is one of the new terrifying-looking Ninja Turtles standing on a rooftop, and there's backlit and smoke, and they look growly and mean, and the tagline is, they're coming for your pizza, which seems like
awful.
A threat.
Yeah, it is. That is literally a threat.
It's not like, ha, they're going to eat
I mean,
your pizza.
From the Mirage Run, it wasn't about, pizza and beer and kids.
It was not
about that.
I don't know how much beer they drink. Though I guess pizza shop owners should be the most terrified.
Yeah.
Right, exactly.
Because that's how they make their money.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Because I got a couple slices in my fridge, but they can have them.
How about you?
I would never give away the first 15 issues of Starman are maybe some of my favorite comics.
Nice. Yeah.
Very good. Andrew Robinson did a bunch of covers for Starman.
Sure did,
back in the day. Yeah. The later arcs. Also, Sandman number 50, the Ramadan story, is amazing.
Also a great one,
Great story. I wouldn't give that up either.
All right. There we go. Cool. You're going to get some free comics.
Nice.
Let's see. You, sir, right over there. I'm going to come over to you. What is your name?
Gene.
All right. Let's give Gene a round of applause.
Yeah.
There you go.
Oh, wow. Taking a bow, Gene.
All right. What's your question, Gene?
Mass 2.
Oh,
yes.
Wow.
They're both from Vivek.
You're only going to get one stack of comics.
Yeah.
The first one is, since there wasn't a lot written about Brian,
yeah.
where did you do most of your research and who did you speak to?
Yeah, so, I really, as I said, I didn't have a choice. There was no, apart from the fact that there were no books about Brian, there weren't the resources we're used to today, like Google or Wikipedia or YouTube or any of those sorts of things. So I had no choice but to do interviews. So what I did is I started by getting my hands on every respected Beatles book that I could find, and I'd read these, 300-page books about the Beatles, and I'd get 10 or 12 good pages about Brian. But slowly I painted a portrait of who were the people that knew him best, whether it was his friends, his enemies, his allies, his clients, his family, former coworkers, et cetera. And sadly, a number of those folks are no longer with us, but the ones that are still alive, I literally cold called them. I was a student, and I just got them on the phone or was able to send a letter or an email, and I just said, I'm not a journalist. I'm not looking for any kind of scoop. I'm just a kid who's the little he knows about Brian Epstein has found inspiring, and I'm just looking to learn more. And I think they probably did a little bit of diligence to make sure I was what I said I was. But, after being a little wary at first, they all of them just said, sure, we'll talk to you. And the first couple conversations were very business-oriented and very answering of historical questions and that sort of thing. But I think when they saw that I was just a kid whose heart was in the right place, slowly they started to open up to me. And that's why it took so many years of research, because to me the most interesting part of the story is the part that you tell a friend, and I think after they became more comfortable with me, they considered me a friend and were willing to talk about it.
That's awesome.
So. Cool. All right, and you have a second question, sir?
Second one is, did you find out any Beatles projects that fell apart once he died that were in the works?
I don't know that there were any sort of particular project that... it would be amazing if that had happened. But there were a number of Beatles albums that never really came to pass. The White Album, which is a brilliant record, brilliant double record, was really originally a series of sessions for an individual record that probably might have been two records. There were a number of album projects that the band were just starting to bicker and... I think Brian was probably keeping them together in that sense.
The band would have stayed together longer if he had lived?
It's really hard to answer a what-if question like that.
Yeah.
I think it's unlikely that he would have kept the band together because they were four incredibly strong personalities. Mm. John and Paul were obviously writing some brilliant songs.
Ringo would have stuck around.
Ringo was technically the first guy to quit the band.
The first guy to
get fed up and say, I'm out of here, was actually Ringo. But, they were all becoming strong personalities. George Harrison, in particular, was becoming an amazing songwriter. Mm. And it used to be, the albums were evenly split between John and Paul songs with maybe a George song thrown in. Mm. And he was becoming an amazing songwriter in his own respect. So I suspect a day would have come where they were... Each of them would have wanted to have been the leader of their own band.
Yeah.
However, Brian Epstein thought of the Beatles as a family. I think there's an element to it that they were the children that, as a gay man in the 1960s, he knew he would never have.
I guess he
loved them in a fatherly way, and like any good father, he dreamed big dreams for his kids. Hmm. And I think that's part of what allowed him to dream those big dreams and to chase them and move mountains for the Beatles. But also, as a part of that, family may fight and family may have disagreements, but you can't ever break up blood. You can't really break up a family. And I believe that Brian would never have allowed them to explode publicly in the acrimonious way they did. If you're a Beatles fan, that they were suing each other. They hated each other. It was terrible. Yeah. And here was a band who really was all about love. Their whole Love Me Do, Lovely Rita, She Loves You, their whole message was about love. That's what attracted Brian to the Beatles. As a gay man who literally had to hide his own love away, here was by helping the Beatles, it was a chance for him to spread a message of love into the world. So he would never have allowed them to have dissolved like that.
Right.
Like many of the great bands, they wouldn't have broken up. They would have just gone off and done other things, and it would have been a graceful end to the history. That's what I think. So.
Yeah, great.
There we go. Cool. You, sir, over there, you have a question. Yes, you, sir. Yes, sir. What's your name, sir?
My name's Rolando.
Nice.
Nice to meet you. What's your question?
So, if you could cast comic book characters as the four Beatles, who would you cast?
Oh, nice.
Well, wow. Blue Beetle.
Okay, Blue Beetle. Great. Yep. Oh, really?
The
leaning?
Other Blue Beetle.
Really, really leaning on the Beetle part.
Beetle, the Spider-Man villain, and then the Lady Beetle.
Yeah, great.
Done.
Wow. I don't know how
mic
much
drop.
I mean, how much musical talent they have.
Do you just drop your mic?
Yeah,
I did. But I was scared, so I didn't do it all the way.
Nice. Just like a real rock star.
Yikes.
I don't know. I think you got to go with the big hitters, you know, because the Beatles are such icons that you got to go with
Dazzler.
No,
Dazzler.
You got to be like Spider-Man.
Oh, by the way, real quick, I know we're answering a question and everything. Pete, I wanted to let you know. I know you were a big fan of the Hulk Dazzler story that I wrote.
I knew this.
That was in continuity. It was actually just released as part of a trade called Hulk versus the X-Men. So
why would they put what you did?
Well,
it's an
in-continuity
story where Hulk goes on a date with a Dazzler. So, if you want to pick that up, it's available on Amazon.
Great.
So anyway, go on with your answer, Pete.
I guess my answer isn't important. You know what I mean? Yeah.
So would you say that Spider-Man Peter Parker, he'd be like Paul McCartney?
Sure.
Okay. Oh, great. Thank you.
Yeah.
That's what I was thinking.
Well, who would you put on?
I think Peter Parker would be a good Paul McCartney in there. I think you could have Bruce Banner as Ringo. You could Hulk out when he was playing. Get a little
nice.
Oh, wow. An angry audience member on that one. Or I guess Ringo would be more cat-like, laid back.
Yeah.
He'd be more of like a Robbie Baldwin speedball type.
You put Speedball on the Beatles?
Well, he's like goofier and sort of just like hanging around. Just like Ringo was.
What about for Maggot as Pete Best?
Oh, so he's left that mall. That's sad.
Well, because you know he showed up for a little bit and then he left.
And then he left. Oh, I guess that's true. Yeah. Oh, sad.
Sad. Which way is it sad?
It's sad both ways, let's be honest. Okay.
So it goes Peter Parker, Hulk. And then you want Speedball? I mean, I feel we should be like Johnny Storm would be a better, goofier, more bigger.
Yeah. Well, I guess.
Should
maybe.
We ask for Vic?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, this is a great question. I wish I had a week to think about it, but I'm off the cuff. I'm going to go with my family comment that the Beatles are a family. So I'm going to go with Human Torch. That John Lennon would be the Human Torch.
Mm-hmm.
Paul McCartney would be Reed Richards.
Nice.
George would get the Invisible Woman role.
Makes sense.
And then Ringo would be the Thing.
Nice.
Wow. It's the Fantastic Four.
That's good.
Fantastic Four.
Fantastic Four.
There you go.
Maybe that's how they got.
Nice.
How it got started. Yeah, maybe that's what they did.
Wouldn't be surprised if there's some truth to that, right? Yeah.
Would you say for Brian Epstein, like Willie Lumpkin or something like that?
Yeah, definitely.
That's a good question.
Is it?
Yeah.
Cool. You are going to get some free comics. I think we can take one more question. Anybody? Yes, you, sir. You raise your hand right there. All right. Your name, sir?
Pablo.
All right, Pablo. What's your question?
The artist. Andrew Robinson, how did you get him?
Nice.
The Fifth Beatle is my first graphic novel, but I've been reading comics since I was a kid. I often say I probably learned to read by reading comics. So I was familiar with a number of comic artists, and I knew Andrew by virtue of his talent. I mean, his work really is amazing. And so when I set out to find an artist, I knew that this was a big story that obviously was a period piece, and so it was important to get somebody who could capture detail. Who could be both photorealistic but also make things their own. And I knew Andrew's talent could handle that. And so through his agent, I connected with him. It was never a question of his talent, as I said. But it was when we sat down together, it was clear that we just hit it off. He loved my script and was a Beatles fan, but got that this was Brian's story, which is an important thing to get. The heart of the Brian Epstein story really spoke to him. And it was also clear that we were going to have a really great collaborative relationship, which was important to me because this was my first book especially, and I also come from a theater background, and theater is all about collaboration. So it was clear that Andrew and I were going to have the relationship where I could tell him at certain points, this is exactly how I want it, and I want it to look exact. Here's the photo reference. Here's the camera angles. Here's the tone. Here's everything. And he could deliver that and maybe put his own twist on it. And there were other moments where I didn't know at all how to do it sequentially in sequential art, and I would say, here's the dialogue. Here's the tone. Here's what the characters are going through. You tell me how to do it, and he'd be comfortable with that as well. So it was really that first meeting where it was clear that we just would hit it off and got the story, the heart of the story we were on the same page with. And so,
awesome.
So very you got your cool. first choice.
Yeah, it really did. And you know, if I can just take one quick second to also point out Kyle Baker, who does an 8-page sequence called the Brian Epstein and Chaos in the Philippines. It's towards the end of the book. And I wanted that sequence to be an homage to the old Beatles cartoons of the 1960s.
Yeah.
Not the Yellow Submarine, but the ones that aired on television.
Yeah.
And Kyle Baker is just, you know, an amazing cartoonist and a New Yorker guy I've known for a long time. And so we had wanted to do something together. And I just approached him and said, I'm going to guess you're a Beatles fan and you're a little older than me. You may have grown up with these cartoons. And sure enough, he was and loved the script. And so I really got blessed. I mean, my two top choices were both right off the bat interested in working in the book. And they're two of the most brilliant artists in the field. So very
That's
lucky.
Awesome.
All right. Very cool. Guys, before we wrap up your audience questions, one lucky audience member is going to get a copy of The Fifth Beatle. So, Vivek, what was your favorite question?
Yeah, that was the comic book Beatles, the Fab Fantastic Four.
Nice.
Yeah,
it's a great
sure.
question.
Oh man,
coming up,
great question.
A copy of the book.
Congrats.
All right, there we go.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you so much.
Awesome. And that is it for your audience questions.
Yeah.
Give yourself a round of applause. All right, guys. Very quickly, it is time for the Week in Geek.
Yeah.
And in the Week in Geek, we're going to talk about some geek culture topics, things happening elsewhere in the world of the geek,
yeah,
which, of course, is X-Men Days of Future Past.
Yes!
Came out. Now, Justin, as frequent listeners of the show might know, you never bother to actually go to the movies or do any research for our show or anything like that.
It is research.
Did
Joyless
you actually
research.
Go to see this
I
movie?
I did. I saw it today, as a matter of fact.
Oh, wow. Last second crab it.
Right before I crammed at the last moment.
Yeah.
Well, it was Memorial Day, which I like to spend with my family, not in
nice.
Some ice-cold music.
Your family
movie.
Who nice. Has a paper for a son?
Yeah, exactly. My paper family. X-Men, yeah, I thought it was pretty good.
What?
Oh, boy.
I'll tell you what I'm sick of is DNA opening credit sequences.
What? Hold on.
We get it.
Hold on. That was one of my favorite things.
Shut up.
I am not even kidding.
I watched that, and then I walked out of the theater, so you let me know how the rest of it
Yeah, but you came
okay,
back
here's
for the post
Here's the thing.
Yeah.
Hey, seeing that on screen, seeing that DNA opening sequence with Patrick Stewart narrating and talking about fate and genetics and whatever else, that immediately made me giggle with joy. Because it was such a nostalgic, exciting thing, and it sucked me right into the movie.
I felt like I've lived
you
that.
Have no soul.
Because that's how the first one started.
I felt
well.
Like
All
I've lived
it.
That 1,000 times.
Three times.
I felt my own DNA when watching that.
I don't know. You, what?
Whoa.
What is that? Mean?
What the fuck is with you?
Yeah,
not what
I
meant,
I
you creeps.
Don't
no, know I mean, the audience.
Were you doing the popcorn trick
you
to
saying?
Yourself?
Oh, man.
Okay.
We've taken a
Can
turn.
Can we reset on this
Absolutely
this
not.
Journalistic
have you
review?
Seen, have you
I,
seen
I am dying to see it. You know, I have a 5-year-old and a 2-year-old, so Memorial Weekend is about the family.
Family weekend.
And when they're a little bit older, if he was a few years older, he would have been coming
yeah,
with me.
Exactly.
But
yeah.
5, he's a little too young, I think. So unfortunately, I have not seen it, but I grew up reading the X-Men were my favorite title when I was a kid. I grew up reading the Chris Claremont books, so I know the arc really well, and so I'm dying to see it. And I also think Bryan Singer did a genius job with the first two movies, so I'm stoked
this
to see what he's done with this one.
This doesn't quite follow the old Claremont arc.
I imagine it doesn't. I mean, I'll tell you,
speaking
right
of,
off the bat, like, you know, one of the things that I think was brilliant about that arc was it was really Kitty Pryde's story, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And I get it. It's a movie, and
she
and
does.
Wolverine is the key character, so I'm assuming that it's more his story.
Well, she does. Ellen Page does some amazing sitting there with her hands concentrating.
That's not easy. She looks really stressed out at different points.
Yeah. Does she try to teach them how to build a maze? Is it, you know?
Yeah, pretty much.
You know,
I would like to point out, we were talking about Chris Claremont. He had a fantastic cameo in the movie.
Pete, we all know about this. You don't even
know. Yeah, totally. That's the first thing. That's what I went to see. No, and then that's when I walked out of the movie.
Yeah, you didn't even pick up on that, and I doubt you noticed either.
I stand by my not answering that question.
All right. Well, anyways, he had an amazing cameo. Pete, Stan Lee, but we got Chris Claremont.
Did you like the movie?
I really liked the movie. I thought the slow motion running sequence was amazing.
Very good. Quicksilver, great Quicksilver
sequence.
Yeah,
that was just fantastic. I mean, I really liked this movie.
Can I ask you guys a question about Quicksilver?
Can you backtrack and tell us what the Claremont cameo is? If you saw it and missed it, I don't want to miss it when I see
it. So there's a part where Peter Dinklage is addressing the Senate, and there's all these kind of like bigwig like military guys and senators and stuff, and Chris Claremont is one of them.
And he stands up and says, "I'm Chris Claremont. Yeah. I wrote this story."
Yeah, I can't believe I missed that. Yeah.
And he looks right at the camera, and then he's like pointing at himself, and then pointing at the camera. Yeah. And he's like, "This is very meta."
He holds up some pages.
Here's my question
comic
about Quicksilver. Somebody asked me this today, and I thought it was a very good point. Why don't they have Quicksilver do everything?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Because the whole plan with they're like, "All right, we've got a plan. Quicksilver, you're going to go in. You're going to break out Magneto. You're going to take him out. You're going to do everything. And then we're going to show up at the door. We're going to punch Magneto in the face."
Yeah.
That's our plan.
Well, what sucked was they used him, and then he was like, "Oh, don't worry. I'm going to set out the big fight where I could really come in handy."
Yeah.
Well, I'm just going to watch TV at home and hold my sister.
Well, that's why I felt like I liked it. I thought the action sequences were very good. The fights were very comic book-y. But I feel like it was a little bit just like, what? Why does this happen? And it was a movie that takes itself too seriously.
What?
Interesting.
No. I want to say some people didn't like the casting as Quicksilver. I thought he was a hilarious choice. And also, I really appreciated the ridiculous amount of duct tape that they got on that guy.
Yeah, that was funny. Yeah,
very quickly, before we have to wrap this up, speaking of duct tape,
yeah.
Evan Peters is coming back as Quicksilver for X-Men Apocalypse, which is coming up in 2016.
Yeah.
There's a little bit of tease of that at the end of the movie.
Yep.
What do you think? Based on this movie, are you looking forward to the next one?
Well, I mean, it just showed building of a pyramid. And
no,
then the
I mean, knowing how this turned out, knowing how this potentially turned the series around, are you looking forward to the next one?
Yes.
I will say, if it's Age of Apocalypse, it's a lot of, like, screwing with time travel and alternate futures.
I don't think it's going to be that. It's not going to be Age of Apocalypse. Yeah. According to everything they said, it's going to be a disaster movie. It's going to be set in the 1980s, so we might get Mohawk Storm.
Nice.
I got to say,
that would be cool.
Storm's hairstyle in this movie was like, it's like, we're going to do a mohawk for sure next movie. It's like sort of edging toward
it's
mohawk.
It's getting there.
She has like a faux hawk in this one.
Awesome. Yeah.
So I guess we'll see.
And I will say, something that people have not been talking about a whole lot, I love Blink in this movie.
Blink was great. Awesome. I agree with you. One of my favorite parts. And her powers are awesome. Colossus was treated very poorly in this movie.
I'm not sure that guy, Daniel Cudmore, I'm not sure he could talk in real life.
It was just a bummer for Colossus.
Sounds like there are a ton of characters in this movie.
But there are so all of them.
Are they wrong?
I really liked the kind of curtain call at the end. Like the first. Whatever. I thought it was awesome. It was very emotional.
The ending was pretty great.
You're breaking too much.
Well, all right, that's it for the week again. Guys, next section. Pete, trivia. Do it quick.
Guys, who wants $25 free? Simply raise your hand. $25 free. Yes, you. First hand up, lady. Come on up.
All right.
What is your name?
Danielle.
Danielle, come on.
Come
over
here. We're outstanding. I'm going to hand you the mic. We're going to trade.
All right. Sorry, we got to rush through this because we're really short on time. How this is going to work is I'm going to read you a question, listen to all three possible answers, get all three right, and you win $25. So are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. So listen to all three possible answers. Here we go. And it's, as long as you read every book that came out, you'll be fine. In BPRD number 119, which I'm sure you read. Who is the big hero in this issue? Is it A, Liz, B, Hellboy, or is it C, slow motion running sequences? So it's either A, Liz, which is the correct answer, or it's B, Hellboy.
A?
A is correct, yeah!
Nice!
Okay.
Oh my God.
Here we go. There's no time. And Spider-Man number 2, why is Spider-Man late to meet the Avengers? Is it A, Electro, B, because he was baking cookies, or is it C, Peter Dinklage should be in everything? So it's A, Electro, or it's B. B, pick B, pick B.
Well, I'm going to go with Peter Dinklage.
Well, that's true, but doesn't answer the question.
Okay, Electro.
Nope, B, baking cookies.
Just okay.
Listen, and I'll give it to you. That's all right, don't cry. You're still going to win. Still
going to
win.
Me.
All right, here we go. In Daredevil number 3, who falls into a trap? Is it A, Daredevil? Is it B, Owl? Or is it C, never get in a plane with Magneto? It's a bad idea. So is it A, Daredevil, which is the correct answer, or it's B?
A.
A, Daredevil. She did it. Yeah. Come see me after the show. I'll give you your gift card. Thank you so much.
Unbelievable. Guys, as we all know, tomorrow is New Comic Book Day. We recommend you go to Midtown Comics because they've been nice enough to sponsor the show. Pete, what are you looking forward to?
I've said it before. I'll say it again. Samurai Jack is amazing. It perfectly represents the cartoon in a way that is very enjoyable, so keep reading it.
Nice. I'm looking forward to Superman number 31, sort of a surprising pick. I don't usually like the Superman books, but this Doomed crossover.
Whoa, Justin fans are going nuts out there.
I know, they're losing it. And Justin Superman fans, the superfans. .com. The Doomed arc has been very, very cool. Superman is turning into... what's
Doomsday.
His name? Doomsday. And, yeah, I know. Well, everyone's rushing, so just relax.
What's that guy in the Doomed arc?
Doomed. It's very interesting in the way. Forget it. Never mind.
I'm looking forward to
Jesus.
Chew Revival number 1 is coming out from Image Comics. It's a crossover between the Chew universe and the Revival universe. That sounds like a lot of fun. Two of my favorite comics, so I'm looking forward to it. Vivek, what are you looking forward to?
So I'm a huge Star Wars fan and very sad to hear about the soon demise of the expanded universe becoming the Legends. So I see there's a few more Star Wars books coming out, so I'm going to read them all.
Nice.
They're
nice.
Still expanded all universe. Right, there we go. God bless them.
And plug your stuff. What should people check out?
Oh, thank you for asking. So, the main thing that I've got out right now is Fifth Beetle. It's at fifthbeetle.com. We're on Twitter at Fifth Beetle, and we're also on Facebook. The book is Eisner nominated, so if you're a comics professional, please vote for us at EisnerVote.com. And I'm really excited about writing a short story for Harbinger for Valiant Comics. That comes out in July, so please pick that issue up. It's the 25th issue. It's an anniversary issue. It's going to be oversized with a lot of awesome creators that I'm honored to be sharing the book with.
Awesome.
That's sweet. Very exciting. Couple of things before we go. Pete.
Friend us on Facebook so you get to know about all the amazing guests we have on the show.
Follow us on Twitter at Comic Book Live.
You can check us out at comicbookclublive.com, nerdist.com for the podcast and more. A couple of people we want to thank. We want to thank our fabulous interns, Iman Bell, Tom Herdar, Craig Fletcher, David McKay, and Riley Trahan. We want to thank Vivek for being on the show.
Thank you for having me back.
We want to thank everybody here at Fontana's.
Thank you, everybody.
We want to thank you guys. We're here every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. totally free. Please tell your friends. Good night.
Good night, guys.
Thanks,
thank
everybody.
You.